The following is a review of the corporate finance principles designed to address the learning outcome statements set forth by CFA Institute. It is also covered in Corporate Governance and ESG, an introduction. The first LOS requires us to describe corporate governance. In the CFA Institute publication, The Corporate Governance of Listed Companies, A Manual for Investors, corporate governance is described as, quote, the system of internal controls and procedures by which individual companies are managed. It provides a framework that defines the rights, roles, and responsibilities of various groups within an organization. At its core, corporate governance is the arrangement of checks, balances, and incentives a company needs in order to minimize and manage the conflicting interests between insiders and external shareowners. End quote. Under shareholder theory, the primary focus of a system of corporate governance is the interests of the firm's shareholders, which are taken to be the maximization of the market value of the firm's common equity. Under this theory, corporate governance is primarily concerned with the conflict of interest between the firm's managers and its owners, the shareholders. The focus of corporate governance under stakeholder theory is broader. It considers conflicts among the several groups that have an interest in the activities and performance of the firm. These groups include shareholders, employees, suppliers, and customers, among others. The next LOS is to describe a company's stakeholder groups and compare interests of stakeholder groups. Shareholders have a residual interest in the corporation in that they have claim to the net assets of the corporation after all liabilities have been settled. Shareholders have voting rights for the election of the board of directors and for other important corporate matters, which gives them effective control of the firm and its management. They have an interest in the ongoing profitability and growth of the firm, both of which can increase the value of their ownership shares. The board of directors has a responsibility to protect the interests of shareholders, to hire, fire, and set the compensation of the firm's senior managers, to set the strategic direction of the firm, and to monitor financial performance and other aspects of the firm's ongoing activities. Typically, the firm's most senior managers serve on the board of directors, along with directors who are not otherwise employed by the firm. In a one-tier board structure, both company executives and non-executive board members serve on a single board of directors. In some countries, boards have a two-tier structure in which the non-executive board members serve on a supervisory board that oversees a management board made up of company executives. Senior managers typically receive compensation or remuneration that is made up of a salary, a bonus based on some measure of company performance, and perquisites such as expense accounts, use of company planes, special retirement benefits, and vacation time off. Their interests can be expected to include continued employment and maximizing the total value of their compensation. Executive bonuses are typically tied to some measure of firm performance, giving senior managers a strong interest in the financial success of the firm. Employees also have an interest in the sustainability and success of the firm. They have an interest in their rate of pay, opportunities for career advancement, training, and working conditions. Creditors supply debt capital to the firm and are primarily owners of the firm's outstanding bonds and banks that have made loans to the firm. Providers of debt capital to the firm do not typically have a vote in firm management and do not participate in firm growth beyond receiving their promised interest and principal payments. The interests of creditors are protected to varying degrees by covenants in their debt agreements with the firm. Suppliers of resources to the firm have an interest in preserving an ongoing relationship with the firm, in the profitability of their trade with the firm, and in the growth and ongoing stability of the firm. As they are typically short-term creditors of the firm, they also have an interest in the firm's solvency and ongoing financial strength. Next, we are asked to describe principal-agent and other relationships in corporate governance and the conflicts that may arise in these relationships. The principal-agent conflict arises because an agent is hired to act in the interest of the principal, but an agent's interests may not coincide exactly with those of the principal. Consider an insurance agent who is paid a commission on policies written. It would be in the agent's interest to write insurance policies on people or property that are not good risks in order to maximize commission income. The principal, or the owners of the insurance company, do not want to issue policies that are bad risks, as that is a money-losing proposition. Insurance companies mitigate this conflict by imposing underwriting standards for the policies they will issue and by continuing to work only with agents who consistently act in the company's best interest. In the context of a corporation, shareholders are the principals or owners, and firm management and board members are their agents. Managers and directors may choose a lower level of business risk than shareholders would. This conflict can arise because the risk of company managers and directors is more dependent of firm performance compared to the risk of shareholders who hold diversified portfolios of stocks and are not dependent on the firm for employment. Conflicts may also arise when directors who are also managers favor management interests at the expense of shareholders, or when directors favor one group of shareholders at the expense of another. There is also an information asymmetry between shareholders and managers because managers have more and better information about the functioning of the firm and its strategic direction than shareholders do. This decreases the ability of shareholders or non-executive directors to monitor and evaluate whether managers are acting in the best interests of shareholders. Conflicts between groups of shareholders may also exist. A single shareholder or group of shareholders may hold a majority of the votes and act against the interests of the minority shareholders. Some firms have different classes of common stock outstanding, some with more voting power than others. A group of shareholders may have effective control of the company, although they have a claim to less than 50% of the earnings and assets of the company. In the event of an acquisition of the company, controlling shareholders may be in a position to get better terms for themselves relative to the terms forced on minority shareholders. Majority shareholders may cause the company to enter into related party transactions, agreements, or specific transactions that benefit entities in which they have a financial interest to the detriment of minority shareholders. Shareholders may prefer more business risk than creditors do because creditors have a limited upside from good results compared to shareholders. Equity owners could also act against the interests of creditors by issuing new debt that increases the default risk faced by existing debt holders, or by the company paying greater dividends to equity holders, thereby increasing creditors' risk of default. There can be conflicts of interest between shareholders and other stakeholders. For example, the company may decide to raise prices or reduce product quality in order to increase profits to the detriment of customers, or the company may employ strategies that significantly reduce the taxes they pay to the government. The next two LOS ask us to describe stakeholder management and to describe mechanisms to manage stakeholder relationships and mitigate associated risks. Stakeholder management refers to the management of company relations with stakeholders and is based on having a good understanding of stakeholder interests and maintaining effective communication with stakeholders. The management of stakeholder relationships is based on four types of infrastructures. The legal infrastructure identifies the laws relevant to and the legal recourse of stakeholders when their rights are violated. The contractual infrastructure refers to the contracts between the company and its stakeholders that spell out the rights and responsibilities of the company and the stakeholders. The organizational infrastructure refers to a company's corporate governance procedures, including its internal systems and practices that address how it manages its stakeholder relationships. Governmental infrastructure comprises the regulations to which companies are subject. With respect to the company's relationship with shareholders, there are standard practices. These practices are required by corporate laws and similar in many jurisdictions, although there are some differences across countries. Corporations typically hold an annual general meeting after the end of the firm's fiscal year. At the general meeting, company management provides shareholders with the audited financial statements for the year, addresses the company's performance and significant actions over the period, and answers shareholder questions. Corporate laws dictate when the annual general meeting may occur and how the meeting must be communicated to shareholders. Typically, anyone owning shares is permitted to attend the general meeting, to speak or ask questions, and to vote their shares. A shareholder who does not attend the annual general meeting can vote her shares by proxy, meaning she assigns her right to vote to another who will attend the meeting, often a director, member of management, or the shareholder's investment advisor. A proxy may specify the shareholder's vote on specific issues or leave the vote to the discretion of the person to whom the proxy is assigned. Ordinary resolutions, such as approval of auditor and the election of directors, require a simple majority of the votes cast. Other resolutions, such as those regarding a merger or takeover, or that require amendment of corporate bylaws, are termed special resolutions and may require a supermajority vote for passage, typically 2/3 or 3/4 of the votes cast. Such special resolutions can also be addressed at extraordinary general meetings, which can be called any time there is a resolution about a matter that requires a vote of the shareholders. When there are multiple board member elections at one meeting, some companies use majority voting and some use cumulative voting. With majority voting, the candidate with the most votes for each single board position is elected. With cumulative voting, shareholders can cast all their votes, the number of shares times the number of board position elections, for a single board candidate, or divide them among board candidates. Cumulative voting can result in greater minority shareholder representation on the board compared to majority voting. Minority shareholders may have special rights by law when the company is acquired by another company.